tell me a little bit about your decision to adopt. How old were you, and why China? Why adoption?
I was probably about 38 years old when a colleague of mine at work had adopted a little girl from China. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And I just looked into it a little bit more. I had made a decision in my own head that I wanted to be a mom. I wasn't married and I had no prospects. I'm thinking Lily could maybe become my matchmaker, by the way. But anyway, we'll figure that out. And I just, you know, getting closer and closer to 40, I was kind of like, what are my options? And, you know, I had known about this person who adopted from China, but I thought initially, why would I go to China? There are children in this great country of ours right here in the United States that need a home, and I can provide a nice home. So I went and met with a lawyer, and she said, you know, it's admirable that that's what you want to do. She said, but it's not a sure thing. If you want to be a mom, you should look internationally, because in the U.S., with all the open adoptions, being a single mom, they're not probably going to pick you unless, you know, you're Rosie O'Donnell or, you know, somebody famous. And so I thought, well, that's good advice. I knew that was for sure what I wanted to do. And so then I went to a couple of different meetings at different adoption agencies. And, you know, they list out all the countries that they, you know, work with or whatever. And I landed on China for a couple of reasons. One, it seemed like the system was well organized and done, and there weren't these issues that were kind of surfacing in some of the South American countries around black market babies. And I didn't want anybody's stolen baby. I also wanted a healthy baby. And you were hearing all these stories in, you know, former Eastern Bloc countries of, you know, drug addicted mothers and the drug addicted babies as a result. And I don't know, that just, it wasn't what I wanted to, I didn't think I could handle that. And China just seemed like, boy, these babies in the womb are loved, and it's, you know, only because of some policy that they can't be kept, or, you know, someone has to make a horrible decision that, you know, maybe that was the place to go. And then I had six nephews, get a girl in the deal, you know, hey, that sounded like a pretty good deal. So that's when I just started to explore China. And about 2 years later, I was 40 when I actually got my paperwork all put together and just kind of dove in feet first and went for it.
So what year when did your paperwork go in? What was your login date?
July of 2000.
And when did Lily come home?
December of 2001.
So that was, you were like the last of the, probably close to the last of the fast ones. Yeah.
Really, yeah. I think maybe there was maybe 6 months, 9 months of about that time frame, and then it just really bottomed, you know, slowed down after that.
Did you have much anxiety about being a single parent? Did you give that a whole lot of thought, or was it just like, go for it?
You know, when I remember somewhat worrying about it, I had a big job. I was very career-minded and had a job and a career at a company that, you know, I probably accomplished more than I ever dreamed I would have. So there was this, you know, kind of like, oh my gosh, I had, my whole life was my job. Could I really be a mother? But of course, when my family said that to me, I said, oh, you're crazy. Of course, I'll make adjustments, whatever. I really didn't know. I mean, you know, you have to schedule your time differently. What I don't think I knew, what I know I didn't know, is how much, it's not just your time, it's your mind. Once you have a child, it just doesn't shut down. And every worry and everything that I did, I felt like, gosh, I hope I'm not screwing up this kid or, you know, whatever. And it became very overwhelming. I don't think I realized that up front. I thought it would be, you know, I mean, difficult to make the adjustments, but not as stressful as it was. And so that was the reality for me afterwards. I also think, you know, and my sister will remember when we were on, right before we went on the trip, I started having back problems. Like, I mean, I'd never had any back problems, but I had this tense back and I could hardly move some days and it was all stress. I am absolutely convinced because within a month afterwards, you know, my back was fine. But that whole process, like 2 months before, while in China, sleeping on those beds, oh my gosh, my back was just spasming constantly. And then, you know, maybe a month or so after we were home, it wasn't. So I think it was all very much related and probably how my body handled the stress that I was feeling, you know, but I didn't know. I mean, I couldn't articulate it as that.
Do you mind if I ask what you did and are you still working in that field?
At the time, I was a vice president of human resources for a medical supply company. I was the second HR person in a $12 billion company. So it was a pretty big job. And that actually varied throughout. I mean, I don't know. I don't remember exactly what job I was in at the time, but I was at a pretty high level with pretty big scope of responsibility. And I am still at the same company. But when Lily was 11, I made a decision to take a step back. And I gave up the VP job and just started doing other things. And now I'm in the second job since my step back, where I'm a program manager and can work from home quite a bit and have a very flexible situation, and it's fabulous. And it was, the decision was, when she was about 11, I was stressed out and I was feeling like I was missing her life. And my other sister, one of my other sisters, was her nanny. And I really felt like my sister was raising my daughter and she had more of her life than I did. And that didn't make me feel good. And I felt like I was missing what I said I want. You know, I felt like I said my family was the most important thing, but when I looked at where I spent my time, it wasn't aligned. My time was still at my job and at my career, and that's not what I wanted. I wanted to be more in my daughter's life and involved in, not in such a way that I was in the back end catching up with it, but rather involved in it on the front end. And so that was the best decision I ever made, as much as initially, and even still today, I miss certain things about the old job. There's a lot of great perks. I don't regret the decision. It was the best decision I made. I felt within 3 weeks a load of stress off of me that I you know, it's just gone. So it was a great decision for me.
So this is so interesting because you wrestled with things that so many, particularly mothers who are working full time with and without partners, wrestle with. And I'm thinking it was kind of an identity change for you too, like letting go of that VP title. Mm-hmm. That must have been just in terms of like, how do I see myself? Mm-hmm. We were talking about identity before. Yeah. Did you have to make financial adjustments when you stepped back? And
yeah, I did. And, you know, it's interesting because my first course, you know, I laid out all my options. One of my options was to just quit. And financially, I could have quit, which I felt, you know, in some ways, you know, that's freeing, right? When it's, I'm not staying in my job because I need the money anymore. You know, I could have afforded to leave. But, you know, then there's the logistics of insurance and things like that. So I still wanted and needed to work, but I could have left. So that was unto itself freeing. Any job that I wanted would have was absolutely a financial step back, you know. But again, I didn't need the money. But I liked the company. I felt like there were other options for me, and I laid those out, and the company was supportive. And so, was it still hard? And I mean, there were people, the guy who came to move me, you know, we have the movers in the office. I packed up my, you know, I had a big office with the window and everything. And he's like, wait, you're leaving this? And he knew where I was moving to, you know, and he's like, are you nuts? And, you know, so it was a big, huge change. That really didn't bother me, though. I have to say, I knew what why I was doing it, and I didn't care what anybody else thought. And if you could have seen, you know, I probably got 100 emails from people saying, you know, within the company who knew me, wow, that is the most courageous thing. I am so proud of you, that I'm so happy for you, and, you know, things like that. I did get a couple of emails like, are you sure? And you're going to be bored, and, you know, that kind of thing. But the far and away majority of them were just, I wish I could do what you're doing, and or in some other way supportive. So it was not, that part of it was not difficult for me. What was difficult was I was no longer in a position of authority. And I like making decisions. And I like, you know, kind of being in the know and knowing what's going on and knowing why we're making decisions. And what I found out very quickly is that's a problem in our company. There's not good communication stream. You hear of the decision in the job I'm in now, but you don't hear the why. And that just drives me insane. So that, I miss that the most. So you have a little bit of ego probably too, but it was more about really just being able to be part of that decision making.
Well, there's nothing wrong with ego. Yeah, you know, right. I mean, it's part, right. It gets you places, and it's interesting that you have a perspective now from the top of the ranks and kind of the more middle level of the ranks. You probably have a better sense of the organization than you had before.
The first 2 years I used to kid, I was like undercover boss. You know, I would be like, oh my God, this is how we run this company. You know, I mean, it was just very eye-opening. I understood our employee survey results better when I was no longer in the VP of HR role than when I was.
It must have been useful to have all this HR knowledge, too, when you were making the decision about adoption, like in terms of policies and...
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get any help with... was there an adoption credit or benefit or... at your company?
The year I adopted Lily, I did have, I think there was like an adoption reimbursement for, I think it was like $5,000 or something. I can't remember exactly, but that was it for anybody, any employee. And although that wasn't paid, but I had 3 months off after I brought her home. So that was great too.
So you were home for 3 months full time with your new almost year old daughter. Having been VP, second in command in HR, and a $12 billion company, how was that transition? What were the first, like, do you remember? I can tell you honestly, I remember the first few weeks and months for me, and I look back and I think, the fact that this child survived my complete ineptitude, I'm sure you were much more capable than I was.
No, I really was not. I mean, my mother called me every day at the same time. So it was just kind of comical. Finally, after about a month, I'm like, do you realize you're calling me every day at 9:30 in the morning? And, you know, I mean, we just got into this quick routine. And, you know, I remember one time when Lily had gotten sick. This was a little later. Maybe she was two. She's throwing up in bed. I called my mom. I didn't know what to do. I was very inept, and I'll let Jean tell the story about in China and what I did with the baby. But, you know, yeah.
My God.
I was pretty clueless, but I had this great village. I really, and my mom would say, and my sister, you know, would be, you know, we're the village. And it was truly, it takes a village. That is my story. And I was able, so when I first got home with Lily, it was Christmas time. So, you know, everybody's off anyway. So that was easy with work. But once work started up again in January, I wasn't going into work, but I was still checking email. People were still calling me, but it felt okay because the first thing they were saying is, how's Lily? How's everything going? Whatever. So it didn't feel so bad. Then in March, when I went back, I was supposed to go back part-time, which lasted about 3 days, you know, and then I was fully immersed immediately. And when she was little, it worked out. It was less stressful because I knew she was in great hands. My sister was her nanny, came to my house every day, wow, took care of her. I went off to work. I worked this crazy schedule. My mom was the backup when my sister Patty would leave. Lily was with my mom and dad. I'd come home to dinner on the table from mom and dad and pick up my daughter and come home. Yeah, it was a good life. I'm not your typical single mom struggling, but it was also my career was number one you know, I mean, I didn't know that then. But, and for me, one of the biggest signs, when Lily was about 7 or 8 years old, we were driving in the car. And, you know, we're just driving. I don't know where we were going, whatever. And she says to me, "Mom, out of the clear blue, will you be able to come to my wedding?" And she's like seven. You know, I'm like, yeah, why? "Well, I didn't know if you'd be too busy at work." And that was one of my biggest signs of, whoa, this is not how I wanted my life to go.
That's a gut punch.
I cried. And, you know, then, you know, you put it in perspective of, well, she's seven. What, you know, she used to play conference call on, you know, with her playmates. "I'm on a conference call. Shh." Well, you know, she heard that from me, you know. And you know, I remember once we were at Mary's Lake House and there were two other little girls and they were sitting at the breakfast bar and the phone rings and Lily's like, "Oh, there's a conference call coming in." You know, and it was. I mean, that's the funny thing, right? I was still working. So that's what she knew, and yeah, so it was very eye-opening for me as the years went on and I added up all those signs that this isn't what I wanted for myself or for her or for my life.
Yeah, it's kind of not, it's not why you decide to become a mom.
Right. And, you know, I was at this seminar one time and the woman was, you know, like a CEO, big, you know, big job. And she would say, you know, you, as a parent, you just figure it out. And so when my daughter needs to get to piano, I call a taxi. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, you can do that. I don't want to call a taxi for my daughter. That isn't, you know, yeah, okay, you have the money to do it. That's what she's saying. You just figure out how to parent different ways. I don't want that. I want to be there. I want to take my daughter. I love taking her to her sporting things or, you know, whatever. That's great time together. I don't want to put her in a taxi, you know. So it was just, again, another sign that was telling to me that, you know, something was off in my life. And it was just, I had the great opportunity because I could afford it. And that was, at the end of the day, the most freeing thing of it was the money didn't matter. And I know I was lucky that way.
Yeah, I mean, you came to the conclusion that parenting is not merely logistics. Mm-hmm. So you have five, there are five sisters in your family. So are you all in Palatine?
Most. One sister lives in another suburb, but she's the nanny, so she comes to Palatine every day.
So you're all within about 20 to 30 yeah. miles of Chicago, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, our mom died 10 years ago.
So your mom really only knew Lily as a very little girl. Yeah. Is your dad into being a grandpa?
You know, I think he loves being a grandpa, but he's very set in his ways, and he's very grouchy.
And he's disabled.
He's disabled. But even before he was disabled, he loves supporting his family and he loves that his family's around him, but yet he wants to watch TV when he wants to watch TV. You know, he's just kind of set in his ways. Yeah, so it's, yeah. But he adores Lily. He adores Kate. He adores David, our other sister's son. So it's, you know, he's very generous with them. So he's, you know. Yeah, he gives in other ways other than just, you know, being a doting grandpa.
So you have a very supportive family. As you said, you have a village. And your experience of being a mother has changed over time. And you've adjusted as Lily has gotten older. Around 11, you started to be home more, have more flexibility in your job. So I around this time, not too long after that, you saw somewhere between, you were telling me. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of what we were discussing earlier. You saw the documentary, were moved by it, and then decided it would be okay for Lily to see it. And that set off for her, you were telling me she then watched it twice through, a kind of catalyzed her desire to look for birth parents. What has it been like for you? Did you expect that reaction? Did that surprise you? What has the experience of a birth parent search been like for you?
So I was a little, I don't know that I was surprised that that's what she would want to do. And I was supportive of it. Oh, I mean, I kind of hoped she would want to do that because I think it is a part of her life and a part of her story. And I think the more you know about yourself and where you come from and who you are makes you a better adult and a better person all around. So I was a little surprised how quickly she made the decision. And she said it immediately. When I saw the documentary, I didn't necessarily glob on to the finding of the birth parents. I globbed on to these four girls who were so incredibly articulate and deep, if you will, about who were they? You know, were they American? Were they Chinese? And that to me is what I globbed on to. And she did as well. The birth parent thing was just kind of for me, oh, okay, she wants to do it. So I was a little surprised at how quick it was, but I was thrilled. I was thrilled and I was praying and hopeful that we would be successful because I would love to thank her birth family because she's the greatest gift in my life and to me. And if I could say thank you to them, I would in a heartbeat. I'm so grateful. And I can't imagine the pain they went through when they had to make that decision. I mean, how could you do that without pain? And so I would love for them to know that she's a great, great kid and going to be a great adult and a great human being. That would give me great pleasure to let them know that. So I would love to find them. And it was disappointing. You know, it was one of those things when we got that final email from Shishi, you know, it's like, oh, you know, and your mind starts thinking, what else could we do? And I just don't know. And I haven't probably done enough research into it, but it was disappointing for me too, because I think it was important to her, but it was also very important to me. And I would love for her to have that connection.
So Shishi was your guide when you adopted, and then she also became your finder, the person who you hired to do some research for you. And as we said, she does this for families. How did she go about the search?
So she had sent us a lot of information, like forms and things, and we just started filling those out. And then we sent pictures of Lily. She had some requirements around the pictures, but basically every 2 years, a picture. So kind of showed her progression as she grew up. And then I think she sent us a draft of the poster, right? And then we edited a few things. Because she had it translated, obviously, and then she translated it back into Chinese, and then she would just tell us the process along the way, and then we just communicated via email. And one of the first things we did was we shared with her the address that we had for her foster parents, because we had been in, I had written to them a number of times, because her foster mother actually handed her to me the day we got her. So I actually got to meet her, and I had friends who I worked with who were from China with us, so they could interpret for us. So we got her address, and, you know, we'd been in touch, and I'd occasionally send a letter to her with some pictures of Lily when she was one or two or whatever. And so we kind of kept in touch. And so then Shishi went and interviewed or talked to Mrs. Yuan and brought her a mooncake and, you know, just made that connection to see if maybe she knew. I didn't think she did, but maybe if she knew who the birth family might be or whatever. But other than that, it was really just hanging the posters all around the Guilin public areas. And I can't remember if there was anything else that she was doing. I think she did put a newspaper ad in.
Yeah, she put a newspaper.
So Lily was in the SWI briefly. Do you know the name of the SWI?
It was the Guilin SWI, yeah.
And then she was in foster care for the rest of that.
For 4 months. So 6 months, according to the paperwork, 6 months in the orphanage and then 4 months with the family.
And what's your gotcha day?
December 9th is our gotcha day because we got the babies at the SWI. And then December 10th is our adoption day.
Okay.
So we officially adopted the next day.
December 9th, 2001. And December 10th, 2001.
Correct.
Okay. Do you think that you will continue to search, or where are you now with all this?
You know, honestly, before just this discussion and hearing Lily a little while ago, I thought our search was kind of over. But I'm actually revitalized to say maybe there's more out there that we should check into and do some research and maybe even reach back out to Shishi and find out what other options we might have. But I hadn't even thought about it until today.
So I'm going to go over here for a minute. Hearing your mother say that, how do you feel about it, Lily? I'm going to do something different since we're in the same room. So your mother is saying, yes, Lois Lane here. So your mother is saying, hey, maybe it's not done. Do you want to continue?
Yeah, I would want to continue to try to find my birth parents. I mean, I still want to, even though maybe the first time we tried to find them, it didn't work. But hope, like, there's still hope that maybe they're somewhere in the world. So maybe we could still find them. I don't know how, but maybe. Yeah.
As Lily enters adolescence and you start to see changes, can you talk a little bit about that? What is it like? How is parenting a teenager?
So, you know, as Jean said earlier, Lily is a rule follower. We sometimes push her to get outside of the box. And she has evolved in such a way from I remember this shy, timid, quiet little girl in fourth grade, and she started to blossom in fifth grade and beyond, and it's been wonderful to watch. She was telling her story when she got to junior high and she would, you know, brush me away. I honestly, you know, took it personal at first. And then we had this conversation about, no, she's just warning people that, you know, I look different than her. I didn't have that perspective. I don't think of her as different from me or looking different. I know something that is, you know, she sees, I didn't. So I had to become more aware of that. So it's good to have those things come out so you know where, you know, you're not putting your own kind of view of it and you're trying to see it from her perspective, and I need to do that more. I'm not always a patient person, right? She gets very frustrated with me because I get very impatient. So I'm trying to work on that and trying to meet her in the middle. I'm not always right, and we have our moments of arguments, and things like phone time are very challenging, but she's overall a great, great kid. And I really am blessed and feel so fortunate to parent her.
So phone time's like, you mean prying the phone out of her clenched fist?
Exactly. Like during homework time, we shouldn't have our phone, right? It's a distraction. When you were in the bathroom, she had to, can I go get my phone? She had been without her phone for an hour and a half. That's like a record. So, yeah, things like that, you know, we have our debates about. But overall, you know, I think we compromise a lot. I think we talk a lot and we try to find the best outcome and the best solution for whatever issue. Now we're learning to drive. So that's been a little stressful for both of us because we're both nervous. You know, and for different reasons, but it's nervous to learn to drive, and her palms sweat a lot, and I'm nervous because I'm...
Because her palms are sweating.
Exactly.
Like, hands on the wheel, kid, hands on the wheel.
The garage door, but okay.
Tell me about being single and how much of... You know, we've been talking about parenting with a village, which I think you're so very, very blessed to have a close family and supportive sisters and your mom. My mom was huge for me, too, you know. But I wonder in terms of, you know, whether you've thought much about it over the years, is it in terms of sort of balance of temperament, stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I do feel a void in my life. There's no question. It would not have been the course I would have charted. And when I would dream of my life when I was in my 20s, I would definitely have a husband and we'd have a minivan in the driveway, you know, or whatever. You know, it was just, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that I wouldn't have been married. Now, that was when I was in my 20s. If I'm really honest and looking back, I'm almost 55 years old. I'm not sure how I would get along with somebody in my life. It would be very difficult for me to compromise on things like, you know, when I decided on Lily's name, I didn't have to talk to anybody else about it. When I decided on what education or what school I wanted to send her to, there were no decisions that had to be discussed, you know. I mean, there's some things about that that are really good for me that, you know, I often reach out and ask for advice from sisters, but at the end of the day, only if I want to. I don't have to. And so when you have, you know, a partner in your life, you know, a fellow parent, you know, it doesn't work that way. And I think that would be a bigger adjustment for me than I probably would be. I don't know how good I'd be at that, honestly. So maybe it all works out for a reason. That's kind of how I've come to process it. But I also hold out the hope that who knows, maybe someday I'll still, you know, I'm 55, but you know, you can live 30 more years easily. So who knows, you know?
My one of my very close friends got married at 50 first time.
Really?
Yeah. And is living this whole second life. So I sort of, you know, I think you're right. I think you never say never, never. I mean, and take it from me, the whole partner thing, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. I get it. I have friends who have wonderful marriages, but when we talk about what they go through at times, you know, it's like, ooh, is that really worth it? You know, so I do think I have a balanced view on that. I wouldn't have been the chart I would have, or the course I would have charted, but I don't know, maybe I'm just not the personality that really can share everything with a partner, you know, with an equal. I don't know.
But you do take time to do your own things and have.
True. Yeah. I mean, I have great girlfriends that, you know, I spend plenty of, you know, weekends or, you know, evenings. We'll meet for dinner about once a month, that kind of thing, which is important time for me. I love being with them. And yeah, I have a lot of other social things. I have friends still from grade school and high school that I still get together with occasionally, not as often. It's my core group, but yeah.
So is it fair to say, is it too simplistic to ask you if you're happy?
That's a really, you know, I think there are things about my life that I'm truly happy with. Are there things about my life that I wish were different? Yes, I wish I had a companion, you know, you know, when I get invited to a wedding, my first instinct is to say no because I don't have anyone to go with. And that's just hard. Like my neighbor's daughter got married last fall, and I really debated about even going. But, you know, everybody on the block was going and everybody, you know, and you know, they all rode together, you know, and all that. And then Barb showed up, you know, it's hard. I feel very self-conscious about it and very inferior about it. But then, you know, I in my own personal space and of my own personal home and my own life, I realized that there's lots of things to be happy about in my life.
So we all have our things that we feel self-conscious about, right? Whatever, wherever we are in the universe.
And we don't all have all the answers, right? It's just you make do or you figure out how you get through it. I mean, I'm glad I went to that wedding, but, you know, there have been others that I've said no to. So for the same reason. So you just find your, you know, choose your moments, right? And you work through it. So I find I do that.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about? Or anything that you would like people to know about a family like yours? anything you'd like to correct about public perceptions or add to or...
You know, it's interesting. I can't think of anything off the top of my head other than to say, you know, don't judge. You know, I think when, I hope Lily doesn't mind I tell this story, but when Lily was in, what? You do mind? When I was in sixth grade, or when Lily was in sixth grade. Okay. I don't know what happened, but I was calling her and I was getting frustrated. She wasn't coming downstairs. And I called her and she came running down and she was sobbing. And I'm like, whoa, I'm not that mad. You know, I'm like, what's wrong? You know? And she said that one of her friends told her that some boy in her class said something about Lily's mom is a lesbian with her Chinese mother. And Lily was devastated. And I laughed. I mean, I found it one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And here's a sixth grade boy thinking he even knows what he's talking about, right? And so we were then, I think we must have been headed out to dinner or whatever, because I remember being at Chili's talking about this. And Lily was so surprised that I laughed about it because she was hurt. You know, she felt really hurt for me. And I just said, I think that that's what, you know, you just have to know that people are making up their own stories. And we know what we, you know, what we know. And even if I was, right, who cares? But it was just one of those moments of, you know, you're judged by other people and you just have to not worry about it. And it's hard for me at times, but I really try to just not worry about it.